So let's call the meeting to order. And in accordance with state law regarding public meetings held via electronic equipment, this meeting will be recorded and the recording will be posted on the authority's website. So I'll do roll call. I am Mark Verholak, Michael Angelini. Lawrence Davis, I don't see him. Daryl Hill, I don't see. And Peter?
Present.
You are here. I'll move to, I don't see any other board members on the call. Jeanette?
Yes, I'm here.
Jessica Bishop?
She's not here yet.
Nope. Okay. Rob Blake, I think I saw your name. There you are.
Oh, I'm here.
Denise Aguilera?
Here.
Joanne Makowitz?
I'm here.
Michael Morris?
Present.
Cynthia Peoples? I see you. There you are. I didn't hear you, but I see you there. And Kara Stewart. I think I saw you. Yep, there's Kara.
I'm here.
Yep. I'm here. Sorry about that.
Okay. Thank you, Cynthia. And then our two guests, would you please identify yourselves?
Sure. Mike Del Judas. I am a partner at Crow. I lead our cybersecurity practice for the public sector. And then Trevor is on my team.
Yep. Senior manager, Trevor Krause.
Excellent. Thank you. And is there anyone else on the call that I failed to recognize or that's here? I don't see anybody. So I think we're good to go. And then I'll just remind all of you, individuals must state their name and title, if applicable, before speaking during the meeting. All votes must be taken by roll call unless the vote is unanimous. And then in the event the meeting is interrupted due to technical difficulties, members and staff will receive a text email advising whether the meeting is adjourned or canceled, or the time the meeting time of the meeting resumption. All right. And I see Lawrence Davis signing on now. So we should be good. With that, let me just get to my, as I toggle between screens and get to our first order of business, which is to look for a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting, which I believe is dated September 15th, 2021. Can I get a motion?
I'll move it, Mark.
Thank you, Peter, a second.
Hi, it's Mike, I'll second.
Michael, thank you. Any questions, comments, corrections to the minutes as provided? No. Okay. All in favor? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Excellent. All opposed? None and no abstentions, right? I think everybody was there. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, great. Passes unanimously. Thank you. Cynthia, I will turn it over to you to discuss the information technology review.
All right. So in your package, I did do a cover memo associated with the risk assessment that we provided to you from Crow. And just to backtrack, we did an internal audit with Barry Dunn that was published in January of last year, that was an actual internal audit of the IT process. So in a follow-up from that, they gave us 12 recommendations. We completed most of them. Some of them were included in the RFP related to the engagement that was awarded to Crow in May of this year. So Crow will go over the full engagement and what, you know, the requirements were, the five or the four deliverables that we had with them. But as a result, what I wanted to do and how I responded to this essentially was to say, here's how we're going to address the first high rated risk items, one of which was related to threat and vulnerability management, vulnerability assessment that needed to be done and should be done on more of an annual basis in our environment. We have determined that We will implement everything that Crowe recommended, and we will address the high ones first, in that we will bring in software that will help us with the risk assessment or the vulnerability assessment reviews. In addition to that, we're putting in patch management policy. And we also already have in the budget for this year penetration testing. So those are the things that we'll address related to their finding, number one, related to vulnerability assessment. And then in the second finding that was also high, the security information and event management solution, we also anticipate bringing in a solution that can actually manage that for us, provide the reporting and everything that we need associated with that. The idea is at this point is to look at some of the software that we already have in place, see whether or not it's feasible for us to either replace them both with something else or supplement them one or the other with something else to make a determination how we're going to, you know, bring that in-house as well. So in addition to that, we wanted to focus between now and a meeting in May of 2022 on strategic initiatives associated with IT related to cybersecurity and coming up with a plan where we can implement all of the initiatives, recommendations provided by Crowe in an orderly fashion. So, you know, we're not bringing in duplicative software. We're not bringing in you know, we're basically just trying to do it the most efficient way as possible. And one of their recommendations was to do a strategic plan. We're not going to wait until the plan is done to do implementations because some of these things can be done along the way. But we want to take a look at what our end goal is, or at least our, you know, 3-year goal is going to be, and then try to strategically place all of these things into that schedule so that we are moving and doing everything on an annual basis going forward. I don't know if anyone has any questions about that and how we got here. So this isn't an internal audit done by Crowe. This is a risk assessment as one of the deliverables we asked them to do for us, and also to set us up to be able to do this risk assessment on our own on an annual basis. So as a result, they implemented the software, they did a risk assessment, and then these are the findings that they had, or the recommendations that they had associated with that risk assessment. So if anyone has any questions related to that, go ahead.
Yes, Cynthia, I do. Just before we get into some of the technical things here, I guess just with regard to taking the actions that are required to satisfy these first two findings, is there going to be a significant budget impact? Do you anticipate coming back to the board for a budget revision for any software or any work, anything that needs to be purchased to remedy these two areas?
To the extent that we're able to do it without making a budget modification this year, we will. And then if anything significant comes up that we need to bring to you sooner rather than later, we'll do that as well. But bringing this strategic plan to you by May of next year also fits in with the timing of our budget, operational budget that'll come to you in June. And during that May meeting, we'll be able to outline the additional costs associated with implementing any of these recommendations or all of these recommendations if there is a cost associated with it.
Okay, so just so I'm clear then, so the implementation of whatever corrective actions need to be done to satisfy findings 1 and 2, those aren't going to be completed this fiscal year. It's going to be next year, and that's when the budget might be impacted.
Not necessarily. So with regard to the first recommendation, yeah. Crowe has already done a vulnerability assessment for us this year. Okay. In performing a risk assessment for us. So right. We don't necessarily have to acquire the software to do that again this year. That can wait to do that do that vulnerability assessment with that software until July 1 of next year. The penetration testing, which would be probably the biggest ticket item here, has already been included in this fiscal year budget. We anticipated doing that prior to this fiscal year, during this fiscal year. So that's already in the budget, and that we've budgeted up to $20,000 for that. And Mike and Trevor have told me that it could be around $15,000. The original estimates that I received were that it would be around $20,000. So that is already in the budget. creating the patch policy and doing the patching is not going to cost us anything to do. And Rob has already been looking at, you know, patch policies from a best practices standpoint so that we can create something between now and the end of the year and make sure that that is complete. The logging and monitoring, as I mentioned, we do already have software that does some of that now. The idea is to make a determination of what we will layer that, what we will layer on top of that or replace or that type of thing. And that may or may not cost anything related to requiring a budget adjustment, but we'll figure that out going forward.
Okay, thank you.
And I know we're short on time here, so I want to make sure that we're finishing everything up on the agenda items by, I think it is 3:55 today, because I know some other people have hard stops for meetings at 4 o'clock. But that's where we are, and I'm going to, if there's no other questions for me, I'm going to turn it over to Mike and Trevor, and they are going to do a presentation related to the engagement that we had with them.
Cynthia, before they go, just a quick question. So Barry Dunn, you said identified 12 risks, and that you've addressed some of them, and 4 of them were dealt with as part of this engagement. This engagement identified 12 risks. That's just coincidental, right? They are not the same.
It's coincidental.
12 totally risks, different. Right?
Well, there actually was one that was the same, but yes, they're totally different.
Okay, I'm getting a little slow, but I thought that was the case. I wanted to make sure.
Yes.
And yeah, okay, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, Mike, Trevor.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I will share my screen for the presentation. Let me bring that up. Everyone can hear me okay?
Yes.
Getting started. Awesome. All right. Can everyone see it, or is it just my background? I don't know which screen.
I can see it.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Put this out of the way. Okay.
Now we're seeing your background only.
It was on the right screen. I apologize. Okay. So as we get started, I know Mike and I did our quick introduction, so I'll just do a real brief little background on the both of us. Mike Del Judas, he is the engagement partner or project executive, you know, overseeing the relationship and obviously the work that needs to be delivered. Myself, I've been a Crow for 10 years. Mike's been a Crow for 21. You know, I was the project manager for the engagement, overseeing a small team to deliver the project scope and making sure that it meets the expectations for Chifa and what they are expecting to be delivered. So that was my goal as well. As far as project objectives, approach, and scope, as Cynthia mentioned, there was a 4 parts to this engagement. First was performing a targeted risk assessment, or IT risk assessment. Second was developing a written information security program. The third was developing a written information response plan. And then the 4th was a business continuity consulting, reviewing the current business continuity plan, business continuity procedures and process to make sure that what is currently implemented and being performed meets industry standards. Okay. So as far as our project approach goes, you know, we requested and reviewed current policies, procedures and practices, standards, performed interviews to determine the processes that are being performed as it relates to all 4 of those areas, reviewed a set of controls following NIST, CIS, industry standard regulatory guidance for the risk assessment, and also reviewing that when developing the information security program and the incident response plan. They specifically were following NIST standards when we do our development for those types of documents. Okay. And then as far as the results for the risk assessment, as we mentioned, there were 12 risks that were identified, you know, doing our documentation and writing a report around the IT risk assessment. So, and that scope included, you know, looking at risks from ISACA, NIST 830, and the COVID-5 framework. Those are the frameworks that we leverage when determining risk. And if you can see here on the bottom right, we have 14 domains that comprise our IT risk assessment, you know, ranging from information security governance, looking at policies, procedures, you know, down to IT operations and how assets are managed, data protection, how we're protecting data on the network and managing that data, and also logging and monitoring such areas as that, you know, looking at how information is being logged, captured, reported, and identifying malicious activity as well. So those are just a couple of examples, but our framework includes about 14 domains. So moving on to the summary of results for the IT risk assessment, you know, we concluded our assessment at the end of July that resulted in 2 high findings and 10 moderate risks, as we mentioned before. I'll go over now, as Cynthia mentioned, we have the 2 high risk findings. I do have the moderates, or we've documented the moderates at the conclusion in the appendix of this presentation. But at a high level, we'll go over the moderates or the high risk items again. First one has to do with vulnerability management. As Cynthia mentioned, part of our scope for the IT risk assessment was to perform some effectiveness testing by utilizing our Nessus vulnerability scanner and scanning the internal network to identify hosts and systems and services, and then to try and identify vulnerabilities, you know, missing patches, missing configurations that may lead to exploitation if a malicious attacker is able to identify those. We did identify missing patches dating back to 2009, 2016, and 2017. As Cynthia mentioned, Rob and the IT team have been diligent once we identified those to identify what patches need to be applied, then applying those patches and making sure that those vulnerabilities are being addressed. The outstanding item as it relates to this finding would be the legacy unsupported operating systems. So Microsoft Windows Server 2012. There are a few systems out there that are unable to be upgraded due to legacy applications or the functionality of those systems, where the out-of-date or unsupported operating system continues to operate for that. And as Cynthia mentioned, that will be part of the strategic plan, is to identify an upgrade path, you know, to make sure that if that's replacing the solution that's on there or the functionality of that system, you know, upgrading it to a new version, and then obviously utilizing a supported operating system that is hosted on to be current and active and supported. Okay. Any questions or comments over the first high risk finding?
So I do have one quick one. So Cynthia, this one, the scan has been done, but it's, to Peter's point, they have identified what needs to be fixed, and you're going to work now on fixing the issues that need to be fixed.
Yes, definitely. I think there were 5 bullets that they had with some vulnerabilities that were already resolved. And as Trevor is mentioning, there's only the one outstanding that needs to be resolved, and that is systems that are on legacy operating systems of Windows. And in some cases, those are strategically being moved, as Trevor mentioned. And in other cases, our old accounting system, it can't be put on a new version of Microsoft Windows. And to the extent that we want to keep that historical information electronically, it's probably going to stay and continue to sit on that, you know, Windows software. However, as we're going forward, as you know, the new accounting systems are all cloud-based systems. So, you know, actively we'll be operating on cloud-based systems, but historically we will have one server, virtual server, still remaining that does have that old accounting system existence still there.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. And then for the second high-risk item that we identified, the agency currently has not implemented a security information and event management solution. This would be to aggregate logs and set rules to try and detect malicious intent or malicious activity on the network, and then alert specific security personnel or IT personnel to investigate and follow up and then follow the incident response plan as intended. You know, making sure we're doing our documentation if it is a true breach or malicious intent activity that is detected. As Cynthia mentioned, there are solutions in-house that are currently in place that can be leveraged to perform this functionality. You know, where certain functionality may need to be expanded, you know, we certainly recommended to look into further solutions that provide this specific functionality, but There are certain solutions there, you know, specifically in networking space, the routers, switches, and firewalls that could be used. But if there is a need to then purchase an additional solution for, you know, Windows hosts and such alike systems where maybe that solution can't provide that functionality, we would recommend to implement a solution like that as well. So any comments on the second high risk finding?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right. As far as the project deliverables, as I mentioned, you know, we developed the information security program and the incident response plan based upon NIST standards. We follow for the ISP NIST 853 revision 4/revision 5 standards and controls. So as we develop that plan, we cover the areas that are recommended and required following those NIST standards, which is one of the most comprehensive out there. And then for the incident response plan, we followed special publication 861, which details and outlines the requirements for what should be included in an incident response plan. So we provided that as well. So we worked in collaboration with Cynthia and her team and Rob to have working sessions, develop those plans, meet those requirements, making sure that there's a pathway to implement additional processes or procedures to adhere to these policies and plans as well, right? Any questions or comments over those deliverables?
Peter, you're muted.
Trevor, this is Peter Lisi. So I guess I just need you to back up just for one second. I'm kind of catching up on all this. So it seems like the first finding, management has a strategy for fiscal 22. The second finding, management's response refers to a solution once budgeted during fiscal 23. I guess, do you feel that that's a reasonable time frame, or given the level of risk for both of these findings, but specifically finding two, should we be trying to speed up the timeline a little bit on that rather than waiting till fiscal 23?
So in regards to finding number one, they have gone through, reviewed the results that we provided and started to patch the missing patches that we have, which is great.
Right. I'm not as concerned about the timeline of finding number one. It's number two.
Number two, I would certainly recommend and say that if they can identify and use current solutions and modify those to identify malicious activity or indicators of compromise, that would be acceptable. However, in looking at additional solutions, we have seen it take up to a year just to do identify a solution, implementation, and move forward. So with that strategic plan, it may take up until 2023 to identify what that solution would be and how that would fit into the given environment. I don't have any concerns over the timeline, but I would recommend that, when the IT team goes to identify the solutions they do have, if they aren't capable, then that's where we would recommend to speed up the process to identify a solution internally or to purchase internally and get that moving, because it could take up to a year to identify what that is. And then, Mike can even agree that, once you identify the solution, even implementing the solution could take another, 6 months to a year to identify the systems, aggregate the logs, create the rules if they're not already created, implement processes and procedures for modification of that solution on an ongoing basis for continuous improvement, right? Okay. We've got to make sure we stay on top of it. Could take time as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Can I, I just want to add, I was going to ask this question, but Peter kind of beat me to it in that, Cynthia, if I understand this, and maybe you're going to get to this, so if you are, just let me know. You have 12 risks that were identified, two that are high that you're going to deal with, right now, as we just talked about. The rest, my understanding is the plan is to more thoughtfully detail out a strategic plan, look at current software and tools you may have to address some of those items, look at what may need to be acquired, so on and so forth. And then over a period of time, rather than just jumping right now, more thoughtfully in alignment with the strategic plan, addressing the issues that that Crowe has highlighted. Is that at least a fair summary to start before I get to my question?
That is a fair summary to start, yes. We definitely have, in most cases, other than, you know, some of the new plans that they've provided to us, we definitely have some element of almost all the recommendations that they provided already in place. A lot of their recommendations are really making them more formal than we have in place across the board.
All right. And then my question is for Michael, if you can answer this, is that a reasonable approach given the remaining items that are out there as being, you know, they're not high, but they're not low. They're moderate findings. But it really dovetails to Peter's question. Should there be a higher sense of urgency to address those, or is the plan appropriate given the time it will take to do some of these things, as Trevor just alluded to with risk number two?
Yeah, there are a lot of variables in play for you know, when you talk through these things. And so when you're looking at the risk as we identify them, we have a number of clients that, you know, everybody's appetite and tolerance is different. So when they're looking at some of these, their perspective, some of these are, you know, these are acceptable for these reasons. And so I throw that out there just in the context of, you know, in talking through this with Cynthia and Rob and kind of, and their approach to mitigating this, there's certainly developing that plan and figuring out where our resources are best spent early on, where we get the most bang for our buck, and prioritizing those things throughout. We certainly are on board with that approach. It's not the, I get the question a lot, and if I'm cutting ahead to a future question, I always get, how do we compare? How do we compare to other organizations? And I always try to table it with, I'm less concerned with how we compare today, but where we're at in 12 months. How have we moved forward? And what I would say is, based on the plan and talking with Cynthia and Rob today, I feel comfortable. If we came back in 12 months and there were still these same risks, I would have a bit of a concern there. But I do think taking a step back, evaluating what's out in the market, evaluating what tools we have. I think Cynthia referred to this. We have some tools that if we tune them right, implement them, they're going to address and mitigate some of these things, which may change our risk profile. So long-winded answer to say, I'm comfortable with the approach. Certainly, we're very excited to see kind of what the plan looks like over the next 12 months as we lay it out. I do anticipate there will be things that will be executed early in the plan. If everything's done end of next year, again, I would withhold comments on that. But I do think that the approach makes sense to build that plan and execute something that brings the most value to the organization.
Great. Thank you. That was very helpful. Appreciate it.
Other questions before we move on?
Doesn't sound like it. So go ahead.
Okay. So moving on to the last project deliverable, we did our business continuity program consulting. In that evaluation, the documentation we received was a little dated. So what we have recommended and what we provided are templates to update the old plans to new plans. So we provided a business continuity plan template, which reviews and goes over, you know, executive summary, instructions for the plan, initial response, emergency management, such items as listed on the screen that they can then use, manipulate, and redocument, you know, kind of bring, you know, those older documents up to industry standards as relates to the plan. And then also the business impact assessment template, you know, looking at those business units and their processes and having each of those units actually develop and document their business impact assessment, understanding what the recovery times are, the objectives, things of that nature, and then making sure that aligns with IT's expectations for how quickly backup and recovery responses need to be, and filling that out. And then the last item here would be just a testing template. So when we do the business continuity test per year, could be once or twice a year, you know, following a set standard procedures, making sure that we're documenting those and we're tracking lessons learned or any follow-up that needs to occur to update the plan or business impact assessments, things of that nature. So we provided those templates of what we have compiled for other clients that we have done this for.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I'll open it up to any additional questions as we have gone through this. And like I said, the remainder of the presentation is just the moderate level risks from the IT risk assessment.
Any questions at all? Michael's shaking his head no. Peter, I'm assuming you're okay. Lawrence, you're still on. Any questions from you?
I'm good, thank you.
You're good, okay, great. I'm good as well, Cynthia. I mean, makes a lot of sense. I echo what Mike just said. I don't care how it compares to others. And this isn't, as we've said before, a gotcha exercise. This is about getting better, right? So I think this is great. I think your plan to look at it more strategically over time makes a lot of sense. As long as our friends from Crow agree with that based on the risk assessment, sounds like they do. So I'm good. Any other questions for the team from Crow before we move on?
Mark, I guess this is Peter. I guess I just have one question for you because you're in the field and all, and I guess it's just kind of repeating my earlier question / concern, and it's about the timeline and the sense of urgency. So I'm not going to profess to have the technical knowledge that one, I think, really needs to evaluate some of these requirements. So I guess just, you know, given your position in the, you know, in the university world and what you see out there, are you comfortable with the timeline and this whole sense of urgency question? I mean, to me, if things aren't going to be implemented for 12 months, to me, 12 months is a long time that something could happen. But I don't know.
Yeah, but I think some of the, you know, when you look through more carefully at some of the items, their documentation of certain things, it's you know, so there are cases where things are being done. They just need to be documented better. So I understand that, you know. Yeah, and then there are some things in there that are, you know, sure, a little bit more risky, but you know, in hearing from our experts here in terms of, right, the risk is relatively moderate or low in some cases. I mean, it doesn't mean we should sit back and not move as quickly as we can, but at the same time, you know, especially in this arena, and what we've heard from both Trevor and Mike, like you just don't go out and flip a switch and turn these things on or off, right? Yeah. There's some significant work behind the scenes that needs to be done.
And I think, Aaron, you know, my lack of knowledge of some of the technical side of this, I think that's, if I knew more about the technical side, maybe I'd have more of an appreciation for the time that's required. Okay. So as chair of this committee, there's nothing here that's going to have you lying awake at night worrying.
No, I'm okay. I'm okay with
it. And I'm okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. We're good on this topic. And so our guests, are they free to go if they want to go, or are they?
They are free to go. I just wanted to thank them for all the work and effort. We did, you know, they did deliver some policies. I know we're still working on assigning some of those tasks to people in those final versions of those policies, but they have definitely delivered everything they needed to. And, you know, we appreciate everything they've done for us.
Okay.
Yeah, I would echo that from Cynthia. Thank you very much. You guys, from what I've seen, you did a great job and it's summarized very well. Very much appreciated.
Thank you very much. If there's any questions coming out of this, of course, let us know as well.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You as well.
You
take
as well.
Care.
Thank you.
Now, Cynthia, so we have one other agenda item and then executive session.
Yes. So I just wanted to do this. Oh, go ahead.
No, so what I'd like to do is I'd like to, from a timing perspective, I'd like for us to be able to go into executive session at 3:45. Okay. And if that means we have to continue the discussion of the continuity at a, you know, a next meeting, that's fine. But I think you can at least get it out there for us to take a look at and review at this meeting.
Okay, definitely. So I will share my screen and go through this very quickly. And Joanne is also, you know, welcome to obviously contribute throughout this. When I show you this presentation, it really is built off of, you know, something that Joanne has developed over the years in working with all of her IT staff. So this is just business continuity analysis for accounting. These are the five areas that I've identified as the key areas that, you know, are of concern to the committee as far as, you know, if Joanne and I were to take that trip to Tahiti that Joanne always mentions, you know, what would be the backup plan and who would, you know, do what? So the areas would be payroll. They would be the general fund, accounts payable receivable, benefit administration, and business insurance. And so here on this slide, I'm just going to briefly touch on both benefit administration and business insurance because these aren't items that just Joanne and I deal with. Jeanette and Denise are often involved with these. We have consultants for both of these functions. So, you know, we're merely playing a liaison role. Joanne plays a liaison role. At times I play a liaison role. Related to those, the applications, the questionnaires, we're all involved in completing some of those documents and or signing off on them. So we feel very comfortable with the consultants in place that, you know, and how we perform those functions in health, that there's no issues with continuity related to those two particular risk areas. So I don't know if anyone else has any questions related to those.
No.
If not, I'm going to move on. Go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. All right. So as far as payroll is concerned, we use a third-party company. It's web-based. It is cloud-based as well. We've been with Checkmate out of Concord, New Hampshire since 2017. And we have done all pieces of this continuity as it stands now. So under normal business, Joanne creates the payroll. Under normal business, I release the payroll. If Joanne is not present, I would do the payroll, although last summer Joanne set it all up for me in advance. She was very nice. And then Jeanette would do the release of the payroll. And then in my absence, which we've also done, is Joanne would do the payroll and then Jeanette would release the payroll. And in any and all cases, the provider Checkmate can step in and do any of those functions that we need, any or all of it or just one piece of it. If absolutely required. And their systems on the back end, when any of these scenarios happen, there are audit trails throughout the system that indicate who did what component of the payroll. Anyone have any questions about that?
No. All right. I don't.
So this is modeled after a file that Joanne keeps on a regular basis and updates on a regular basis related to you know, who does what function. It's a little bit wider than this. It has each accountant separately. It even has a, you know, column for the officers. And now we've added a new column for Julia as the operations reporting analyst. But at a high level, when we're looking strictly at, you know, Joanne or my absence, the red boxes or the orange boxes represent the primary person doing those functions or the primary roles doing those functions. And then the others for backup. So in the case of the internal financial statements, internal, so those would be the monthly ones that we're sharing at each of the, or quarterly at each of the board meetings. You know, Joanne and the accountants are the ones that are developing those. And I am signing off on some of them, not necessarily on the subsidiaries, but I can do that role if necessary. And then for the subsidiary statements, they're being created by the accountants with oversight and review primarily by Joanne, and again, that's something that I could do if necessary. Bank statement reconciliations, that's a process that spreads all of us because there's so many bank statements. They start with the accountants, and then Joanne and I are the sign-off on these. We are shifting some of those responsibilities with the addition of new staff. We might even shift those a little bit more with the addition of the new accounting system. So we have full coverage there. Budgeting is the same. We have full coverage across the board related to that and the accountants. And in the case of CSLF, we also have a consultant. But everyone is involved in that process, and including Jeanette when it comes to the subsidiaries. So that's definitely a well-covered function. As far as fixed assets and capital expenditures are concerned, Joanne is the primary person for those. Most of the capital expenditures and fixed asset components I'm quite familiar with because most of them come from IT. So I can definitely serve as a backup related to those functions. Audit requests and support, that again could be internal, it could be state audit, it could be independent audit. Well, not really internal, but primarily for the independent as it relates to the general fund and for the state. That's primary function of both Joanne and I managing those situations. So in my absence or in her absence, those things, there's continuity. And obviously the accountants could be backup related to that because they are fully engaged in the entire process of working with our auditors as it relates to all of our financial statements. Do you have any question about general fund related risks?
No, not Peter.
No.
Okay. And then lastly, we have our accounts payable, accounts receivable, and any other continuity items that, or any other, you know, items that are being performed by all of us in the accounting area. So accounts payable is something that is primarily done by the accountants. It is with oversight throughout the process with Joanne. We don't really release or print checks or release wires or ACHs without Joanne having done review and approval of all of that. And then I have a star for me under managing director, and that's really because the officers also release wires. They also sign checks. They're also a part of that process, and even some of the ACHs, they do releases on those types of things. And all our checks actually require two signatures, so all the officers are involved in that component of it. Accounts receivable, third party, and any cash receipts, that is primarily performed by the accountants, as well as Joanne obviously being able to back any of those type of functions up. Trust accounting is the same thing that we're doing related to our bond issuances. That is the accountants with Joanne backing that information up. But it is safe to say that I actually, when I first started here at Chief in accounts payable, I actually did do trust accounting a long time ago. So I do have that knowledge. I haven't done it in ages. It, you know, it would be a struggle picking it up, but definitely I could serve in a backup if I needed to. So state filings, an example there we gave is the OFA reports that we have to do. So we also have any of the other quarterly state reporting that we have to do. And the accountants and Joanne primarily perform those. The accountants doing the subsidiary ones. They all go through Joanne as they get submitted. And I, too, could back that up. And I'll state that primarily because Joanne has created in some of the internal statements that she's created, there are several tabs in that file, one of which is the OFA reporting. So as long as you're doing the account, you know, the regular counting and maintaining those in the internal files the way you need to, your OFA files are also getting updated at the same time so that they can be submitted. Annual filings are 1099s. That's something that Joanne primarily does. I know the accountants could do that as well, based on reports and things we have set up in our accounting system to, you know, handle those vendors. SEC reporting that we do on a monthly basis, that is primarily done by the accountants. When that was first brought in-house, I actually was involved in setting up some of that. It's different now, but I was involved in that process at that time. And so, you know, the controller, Joanne, or I could assist with that as well. And then with accounts receivable before administrative fees, Joanne is the primary person to do that function. But I do know that either Carly or myself could back that function up if necessary as well. So the accounting department does consist of myself and Joanne as a controller, and Carly Levin as one of our accountants, and Kevin Berry as the other accountant. And Carly primarily does Chesla financials, but since she's been here, Chesla wasn't always here, so she's very adept to doing anything related to CHIFA as well, and does accounts payable backup in Kevin's absence, and Kevin primarily handles CSLF. But all of this runs through Joanne. And I don't know, Joanne, if you want to comment on, you know, what you've done, your thought, your theory, your method of operating as far as cross-training is concerned, that would be great.
So I know you're, it's 3:46, we're past our deadline, but
yeah, sorry.
That's okay. I'm just real quick. I'm just going to say that when we first took over Chesla and CSLF, CSLF of course is in QuickBooks, so it's a little different, but Chesla, when we first took it over, they were also in a QuickBooks and we converted them, and we purposefully designed the financial statements for Chesla, which of course are a little more intricate than Chifa, but they work the same way. So the accounting system gives you the data in the same fashion. It goes into, right, currently into an Excel spreadsheet, but they're designed the same way intentionally so that if Carly needed to, she could easily do Chifa. And of course, if Carly were to go to Tahiti, I could also take over Chesla. You know, it'd be a little more of a little, it'll take a little time to figure out which one, which bucket goes where, but they are the same. So they get posted the same, they get uploaded the same, the general ledgers are the same, the everything works the same for that purpose. And of course, our new accounting system, everything's going to be the same once we get those reports out, which we hope to do with the period ending December 31st. We hope to get those right out of the system so we don't have to spend time number crunching in Excel. So that's it.
That's it. Sorry for the couple minute delay. We will let you move forward on the agenda.
No. Mark, I just want to say really thank you very much, Cynthia and Joanne, for this. You probably know I've been one of the people that have been asking questions about business continuity and if Cynthia and or Joanne go off to Tahiti, I mean, what happens? And I really appreciate this presentation because it did a wonderful job of answering the questions that I've had for quite a while. So thank you very much for putting this together. I really appreciate it. Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And as I view this, I mean, if you combine this from a business continuity perspective and you look at what Barry Dunn does from a controls and a segregation of duties standpoint, you know, you feel pretty good that everything is covered there. So
I agree, Mark.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. I don't know how we do this, but we need to adjourn to go to executive session. Is there a room?
I'll move that we go into executive session.
Oh, I forgot we got to do that. Okay. Can I get a second?
It's Mike. I'll second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. We pass. All right. We are back, at, 3:58. I think all of our business is done and complete. And unless there's any further discussion that needs to be had, I'd look for a motion to adjourn.
I'll move it.
Second,
Mike and Julie.
All right, great. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, excellent. Meeting adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Mr. Chair, you're right on time, 4:00. Thank you.
All right, goodbye.